Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Bald Men on Campus, an ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaPhonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, we are so excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, tipping off the start of the NBA season with exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap, and also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live from New York City. The host, I don't know if host is the right word. He got a comedy special on Comedy Central, 1 whole hour, Imperfect Messenger. His name is Roy Wood Jr. Roy, I don't feel like you host your own comedy special. I don't even know what the word is that I'm supposed to use in this place.
What I love is that in the credits it says, I appeared. It's like, it's me. When did nobody else appear? Appearing, Roy Wood Jr. Yeah, man, stream it for free on ComedyCentral.com. If you got the right situation set up on your laptop or your phone or the app, swing by. Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you, man. So how did you feel about the special?
I felt great about it, considering the runway that I had to put it together, because half them jokes I wrote during COVID, and then I spent most of 21 working them out on stage under COVID situations in strange places. But I don't feel like you can shoot a special and sit on it for 8 months. I also don't feel like you can shoot a special in 2 years, because the country is changing so fast. So this idea of having a 2-year curve to develop the material, man, we'd be on something different. We might be on Mars by then. Be on our 8th booster shot, working on our 3rd leg, our 5th arm. You never know. So for me, this was the shortest turn time from inception to air. And we shot it and aired it 2 weeks later. I was paranoid, man.
How much different is that from usual? Because I feel like 2 weeks turning around is a different animal than most would typically have in that time.
It's wild. The normal turn time is about 5 months, but most of the specials that I've seen this year have gotten it down to about 2 months. So I'm not going to sit here and act like 2 weeks was some revolutionary act, but it seems like everybody is off of that 5 months. I know Michael Che, that was a 2-month flip. Ricky Velez over on HBO Max, I think that was a month and a half, at the most 2 months. Because I mean, we're all in New York, so we kept bouncing into each other while we were working on our stuff. You can't have no special and sit on it, man. Somebody, I can't remember who said this, dog. They said comedy ages like fruit, and you got to have it immediately. Because the moment you put them jokes on TV, they start browning, dog. That's why when you go back and look at old stand-up, a lot of it don't age. It's a lot of brown bananas out there that was fresh at the time.
So what was the purpose of holding that stuff for that long in the first place? Because I would think just, I mean, the world moves faster, it feels like, than it did before, but the world moving fast ain't no new condition. So, like, you would have thought this is something that somebody would have thought of before.
I feel like part of it is the marketing departments with the networks and shit. I feel like it's the marketing departments with the networks and stuff. Like, we need time to see where this goes on our calendar and where to put it. And then da, da, da. Like, even with Comedy Central, they're still delaying. It's not on Paramount Plus yet, which is part of the Comedy Central brand or whatever. But my situation is different because I'm beholden to the linear networks, not just only Comedy Central America, but you have CC Canada, where it airs a week later, then Europe, then Africa, then Asia. Then it goes to the on-demand pay window, then it can go to Paramount Plus. So I was also trying to calculate that in as well, man. But, you know, I just think that when you look at comedy, bro, in these days, You don't want to be the dude that's out of touch with what the streets is talking about and what people are talking about. I just think people want gratification faster. I think the concept of a special has to change. Like, I think, honestly, comedy turns into these short 10-minute quarterly things, you know? Like a 15-minute quarter special or some shit. Like, I don't know, man. I just think that the way it's been done, I don't think we can stick with that forever. I was reading up on NFTs last night, man. That might be the new thing. I might just do one joke and sell it.
Dog. The NFT thing, like, I'm generally just down on the concept of the funny money in the first place, but I understand the funny money. I feel like I kind of understand NFT, but
I love
don't
that you put
really.
Everything under funny money. Bitcoin.
Yeah, right. Crypto. Like, all the cryptocurrencies are funny money. Like, that's just, like, at first it was just Bitcoin, and that was the funny money. But all the cryptocurrencies are funny money. Every single one of those falls under the heading of funny money. But the NFTs use the blockchain technology. But they're like actually like the opposite of funny money in some ways. Like, they are verifying to you, you are the owner of this thing right here. And then during pandemic, people were bored and didn't have nothing to do with their money and no way to set it on fire because they couldn't go to casinos. And then they started paying ridiculous amounts for an image on the blockchain to say that it was theirs. And I understand it's not terribly different than having an original piece of artwork versus having a reproduction, except it feels completely different than that. Now, if you ask me to explain it, I can't do it. I'm just telling you how it feels.
I don't know what stops me from taking a screenshot of something you claim is exclusively yours and me just posting it. And what's the worst you're gonna do? You're gonna snitch to me to YouTube and then they just gonna delete the video? Like, I just can't sell it. So that part of it I'm trying to grasp. What I do know, bro, is wherever technology goes is where entertainment eventually heads. So it would behoove me to learn whatever the hell this funny money is, because after that, after funny pictures comes funny videos. After funny videos comes funny sketches. After that comes funny one-hour season-long dramas. So I'm slowly trying to learn that world. It might be nothing to it, but that's kind of what I'm stepping into right now, man.
Yeah, no, I had not even thought about the idea of NFT for comedy. Because everybody, duh, I ain't going to lie to you, man. I looked up the other day. I don't know if you've seen this, but the homie Dez Bryant apparently has gotten big into this stuff. And he was talking, I don't know if he was talking about going on Clubhouse or one of those. And he was, you know, talking about the NFTs. And I don't know how I felt, honestly, about myself, as my thought was, like, is that who gonna lead this horse to water? Like, is that who I'm gonna let lead
Probably
me into financial advice? Like, I just don't feel like, I ain't saying the man's stupid, because there's a lot of smart people that I wouldn't follow down this road. But I just don't feel like I know Dez Bryant from a place that makes me then want to holler at him when he say, hey man, let me tell you how you can come up on some money. What, running a 4-3, catching 10 touchdowns? Oh no, you're talking about something okay. In the financial space?
So you've done my podcast. Shout out to Royce Job Fair. We haven't put this episode out yet, but I'm only bringing it up because what got me into NFTs to begin with was a conversation we had with a high school basketball prodigy's mother a week or two ago. There's a kid down in Tallahassee named Jalen Martin. Jalen Martin balling out of control, jumping out the gym, et cetera, et cetera. And rather than continue finishing in high school, he moved over to one of these high school prep academy programs where you just learn all day and then you learn the sport of basketball professionally in the afternoon, and they're paying the players $100,000. This kid walked away from high school sports to start making $100,000, and they're giving the players a piece of equity in the Overtime Elite Academy mm-hmm. or whatever. They're giving their own cards, but they're also giving the players NFTs that they could profit off now. Which means that if Jalen becomes LeBron or D-Wade or whatever the hell, then this NFT that I bought of him now could be something later. And I know it's no different than an actual sporting card, but the idea of a digital trading card, that's what made me kind of understand this world a little bit. Because I'm like, oh, I get that. I used to have baseball cards. They were all steroid era and the rest got damaged in a flood. when my mama moved from the 4-bedroom to the 2-bedroom apartment, and they still ain't gave me back my baseball cards. That was 95. I'm over it. I'm clearly past that.
Is that a stepdaddy?
He almost was. It
did. Okay. Okay. I just heard the tone of that circumstances, and I just wanted to make sure that I was reading this properly.
He's a good dude. He just needs to just give me the keys to his basement and stop using COVID as an excuse, man. I ain't finna come over there and put no COVID on y'all. Let me get in that basement. I got to get my old Rafael Palmeiro. I know it ain't worth nothing, but yes. It's mine.
Yes.
It's mine. Mm-hmm. I got the old Sammy Sosa, dog, when he still had the Jerry curl, dog.
Yes, yes.
Texas Rangers, dog.
Oh, yeah. No, that was it. He was Texas Rangers, and he was White Sox before they made the greatest jersey upgrade of all time.
But yeah, this idea that people can be out there getting money a number of different ways, especially high school kids, you know, and then even if you don't go pro in that academy, you still get the $100,000 and they put it on your college. Mm-hmm. So you could blow out whatever knee, or you could just not pan out and not get any scholarship offers coming out of this academy. And you still got $100,000 towards school, because I know you're technically ineligible for scholarships and all of that stuff, but they still got your tuition. So, you know, in speaking with that one, when you hear a black woman in her 60s talking about NFTs, then I was like, all right, maybe I can learn this.
Yeah. Now, I was intrigued when I saw that about, because I was talking to somebody, me and my brother were out, and he's got a buddy who works in the youth sports space. And they were trying to figure out, like, how to get the NFT stuff to work for them. And one thing they were talking about is giving people NFTs. Like, it's almost like giving them the picture when you ride the Texas Cyclone at Astroworld and they get a picture of your face, like, you know, going down the hill. And, you know, they give you those mm-hmm. pictures to keep. And if you ultimately turn into somebody, then they're yours to sell and, you know, make something out of or whatever. But it's the most interesting lottery ticket, because if nothing happens, nothing happens. It's just cool for you and your people to have. But, like, I need mine to be, and I mean, and you tell, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like the original version of a piece of artwork versus a reproduction, every time you reproduce it, it gets degraded. You know, like, that's just kind of the nature of how things go. And so with the NFT, it feels like reproduction does not involve degradation, which takes away, for me, the impact of having the original beyond just being able to say, I got the original. But I guess people do like being able to say, I got the original.
Yeah, but you're Skrelly with the Wu-Tang album at that point.
Yes.
You're just a dude who got it. And at some point, we just have to go, man, kiss our ass, man. We're not. You ain't going to let us hear it. But, you know, I don't know. I'm looking into that. Just once porn figures out NFTs, comedy's coming around the corner. Just yes, know that.
That's fair.
Once your OnlyFans, the people you subscribe to, not you personally, Bo. We're talking about the other sinners that listen to this podcast.
Yes.
Once your favorite OnlyFans account starts creating NFTs, then you know it's mainstream. And it ain't funny money no more. Because porn ain't funny money.
I mean, no. It's the money's not funny, but because the things about that world that, it's not funny. It's just a little disturbing.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Let me say this about Skrelly, though, before I forget. So if I'm going to have the only copy of an album, right, and pay, like, the money that he paid for it, and I rock with the Wu, like, I'm not pretending like I'm not a fan, but I'm going to need that to be something that women like. Like, if you go to a Wu-Tang concert, I don't care if it's at a club, I don't care if it's at an arena, it's just wall-to-wall straight dudes. Like, when the Cambridge Analytica thing was happening at Facebook, I think they said the number one indicator of a straight man was clicking like on Wu-Tang stuff. Right. If I'm going to have the only copy of an album, it's going to have to do better for me than the homies going to come over here and we just going to go like this all the time, nodding our heads to the new grimy beats.
It's not something I would pay for, but I am intrigued. Although I feel like there's something a little grimy about the glorification of high school athletics that's now bled into the eighth graders, I'm hearing.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't done my homework. I haven't done a deep dive yet on what's happening in the middle schools, but I do think it's getting a little slimy. So I'm kind of on, am I part of the problem if I'm buying high school NFTs?
Oh, yeah, you absolutely are.
Okay, so then I won't buy one. But yeah. I sure did my homework last night because I'm not trying to have my bank account zeroed out. That was the first thing. What's the scam?
Yeah, the thing about like just the general level of interest that we talk about with high school sports and where it's come to is the professionals are like supposed to be rare. You know what I mean? It's like somebody like diamond in the rough type situation, or you just look up and there's a star, and that one star is the dude in the city. Yeah, right. It's really just supposed to be one of these. But the idea is like I hear all these people and they talk about, yeah, we got to go make this trip on the weekend because the kids playing basketball. You know, we got to go this because there's a soccer tournament. We doing that because it's a lacrosse tournament and all of this stuff. And I'm like, you know, this kid ain't going to the league, right? You know, and people, this is the part that I understand, is that people believe that in order to give their kids a shot to go to the league, they got to do all these things on the front end and give them all this training and everything else. And guess what? Somebody going to find some dude in Africa that they ain't even never seen dribble a basketball. All they know is that he's 6'10 with long arms, and they going to give him a scholarship over your overdeveloped, try-hard little homie that you've been taking around to the suburbs of America to improve at what they are. Like, ain't nothing substituting for raw talent. Raw talent is what's getting them to the league.
Chill, dog. You're hurting feelings, dog. Keep going.
I'm just saying, though. Raw talent is what's going to do it. Like, if your kid ain't really that fast in the first place, you ain't about to train your way into it, because them raw talent dudes are going to go get that training and get better, and your kids are going to have that training and still have fairly mediocre athleticism for the level that we're discussing. Now, you want to get them on steroids? I mean, maybe that's your plan, but I'm just telling you now.
I don't feel like that's not coming. As high school athletics becomes more profitable and more obsessive, I do think that, why do you think you have a Bishop Sycamore? It's because of America's obsession with prep schools. Got a bunch of 28-year-olds, as my homeboy said, a bunch of New Jersey firefighters pretending to be 16 for the sake of getting a scholarship somewhere. So I learned early on, that's the one thing I give my high school coach. My high school coach told us off the top. He was like, ain't but two of y'all got the tools, and ain't but one of you got a chance. And I ain't going to tell you which two, but if you look around, you'll know which two I'm talking about. He was talking about Eric Thomas and Brian Gordon. Those were the two he was talking about.
Yo, here's my question. How did it feel to be the one with the tools but not the chance?
Oof.
Like, what are you saying about me?
It's wild when you think about it, because when I think about my high school days in Birmingham, the only person I played against who ever saw a sniff of pro time was Russ Davis with the Mariners. I think Russ was out in Hueytown or Pleasant Grove somewhere, because we know who got drafted and who did what. Nobody. Whole of Jefferson County, class of 96. One person. Russ Davis. The end. No more. We're done here. I don't know, man. Like, I always got jealous of the guys that were talented but didn't work hard. Because I was the work hard guy. But then I just realized, all right, in baseball, I would be the equivalent of the guy that just comes in. I'm ninth off the bench. I'm JaVale McGee before he turned into JaVale McGee. I'm just out here to do something silly. And y'all go, what? And then you look at the box stats and realize that, oh, I did box some people out so you could get that rebound. But ain't no stat for that. So, you know, I was at peace. I was at peace. And then I tried out for baseball at FAMU. Yo, you know what's so cold-blooded about college baseball? Now, I don't know if this is legal, but I can tell you what they did at FAMU. Baseball tryouts was 3 hours. They had cuts every 40 minutes. That's some cold-blooded shit right there. You know, high school, you're supposed to get 3-4 days. It's, you know, today we work on catching. Tomorrow we hit. Wednesday we throw. And then cut to, we do a scrimmage on Thursday. Cuts Friday morning. FAMU, they had a dude with a whistle and a bullhorn. Every 40 minutes, he blew the whistle. He called out numbers. If that number wasn't on your chest, you go home. I got cut in 40 minutes, bro. Whole dreams crushed. Wow. I was working at Shoney's 2 days later.
Wow. And it was white boys they gave your spot to, wasn't it?
Was it not that year? I think they already had their white boys. I think they had, like, it was either a black dude or a Cuban that year. But I also didn't know that black college baseball was so white.
Well, that was what I'm saying, like, is that, like, especially now, as they don't really encourage us to play baseball like that, like they used to, because the money ain't there quite, you know, in that same way. You go to the HBCU, and they got to fill these teams out, and it's white dudes, and I want to know their stories.
Winston-Salem State, they ball out with a predominantly white team. Bethune-Cookman is mostly white and Latinos as well. And they win the MEAC before they was in the SWAC. They won it regularly. Oh, real quick, speaking of the SWAC, I have to give a shout out to Jackson State University. And I don't know Deion Sanders, but I will credit him residually for what the Jackson State football account did, which was give a shout out to Florida A&M as we head off to the FCS playoffs. Been a lot of trash talking this year. I don't know if you part of, I don't know how much you delve into HBCU football Twitter, but I'm deep in there. It's been a lot of chirping this year between Jackson State and FAMU. But at the end of the day, Jackson State said on their Twitter account, quote, "Congrats to FAMU football for earning a spot in the playoffs. You better believe that Jackson State is behind you. We all need to root for the Rattlers because this is bigger than us. Hashtag I believe." And after a season full of trash talking and teasing about Deion Sanders being in a wheelchair doing donuts on the sidelines, it's very nice of them. And I think the culture that, do we call him Coach Prime? What do we call him? I don't want to get in trouble like that reporter.
I don't. You are welcome to call him Coach Prime. I am. That's a step farther than I am willing to go.
He is a coach.
He is a coach.
Is he a coach?
He demanded it too much. Like, you got to let us do that if we decided. You ain't going to make me call you coach. I'm 41 years old. I don't play for you. You're not going to make me call you coach nothing. Like, that's not, if I do, I do. I don't. But you ain't going to make me do it. Now, here, the thing with me and Deion there, and obviously they're building something that's making for a strong football team. My thing has always been, though, I care about what he's doing for the players more than I care about what the players are doing for him or doing for the school or whatever. So winning games, I ain't go to Jackson State. So then winning games ain't that big a deal to me. However, what I think is underrated in this is, man, they are packing them into that stadium. I saw what appeared to be a sellout, and you don't see at a 50,000-seat stadium, or however many of that stadium holds, I think it's somewhere around there, they are doing huge attendance numbers. Like, people who are around J-State care more about their football team than they ever have, and that's an interesting place because of the starting level of racism in that state as embodied over the decades by the flagship institution of the state of Mississippi. Black folks, like, you can kind of root for Ole Miss, I guess, if you want to. I wouldn't do that. So they lean in on their black colleges in Mississippi in a completely different way.
Yeah, 60,000 is the cap at Mississippi Veterans Memorial Stadium. 60,000 people is the cap.
And they've been getting them in there in the 50s.
I think that it is good ultimately for recruiting in the long run. I mean, the whole black college football, why the black talent go to the white school, that argument, a lot of that is rooted in quality of living on campus and, you know, a little bit of the money, if we're going to be honest. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, but I think it's good. I find it interesting, though, that Deion made more of a splash coming into Jackson State than I would say Eddie George did coming into Tennessee State.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if that's because of the nature of their personality. Because Eddie doesn't care whether or not you call him Coach George, and he's not going to make a thing of it. But I think that there's some showmanship that is just associated with the black college experience in general, across the board. So if you have a coach that's also more of a showman, then what you're going to watch feels like more of a show. So, you know, and in that regard, I think it's net positive. And so, you know, for that, I'll call him Coach Sanders.
Yeah, Coach Sanders, I might be willing
to. If I saw him on the elevator, I'd say Coach. Coach. Hey, Coach. What's going on? Because black men like that. Black men like being called coach. It's like a show of respect.
Yeah, white men love it even more, though. Good gracious. Man.
No, white men like hoss. Hey, hoss. If you in the South, you black, you want to make a white dude smile. Hey, what's going on, hoss? You call me hoss?
Like, yeah. Yo, Eddie, you know, hoss? The Eddie George, Deion Sanders comparison is really as simple as you made it. One of them is Eddie George and the other one is Deion Sanders. Like, Eddie George is big a deal as
they
he was.
They both Hall of Famers.
Well, Eddie George ain't in no Hall of Fame. He a Ohio State Hall of Famer. But in the end, Hall of Fame ain't what we talk about. Jonathan Ogden is a Hall of Famer. You know what I'm saying? But he ain't Deion Sanders. Like, we could go up and down the list of all these people, but in the end, they ain't Deion Sanders. And if Deion Sanders is good at anything, it is selling Deion Sanders.
Well, if he can sell himself at the expense of getting asses in seats, I'm okay with that for now. He's not going to be no career. He ain't finna be there forever. He ain't finna be Doug Williams with it.
No.
Be there 20 years.
But that's what I need people to understand, is that Deion is figuring out how to parlay this. And I don't blame Deion for that, but just don't try to tell me it's anything other than that. And then what happens after you go? The thing about the donuts in the wheelchair, though, I don't think people realize this, is that, you know, Deion got a lot of wear and tear on his body, you know, from all them games he was playing and everything else. And so Deion rides around like in a lark. Is that what it was called when they had him in the infomercials? The lark?
Like the little golf cart?
Yeah, like, yeah, the buggy that they ride around the...
Like a Walmart scooter?
Yes. Like, he did a reality show many years ago where he was riding around in that around his own house. And so I saw a clip of him in the lark on the sideline at a Jackson State game, because I didn't realize, you know, that apparently he needs that, not to like fully get around, but from time to time needs a break. And I'm glad to see that y'all over there on, like, I'm not deep enough in HBCU football Twitter to see all the trash talk that y'all got, but if y'all got jokes about him doing donuts, I'm like, oh, okay, this is what it is. I got you.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's just black culture. We see a weakness, we gonna jump on it. Your coach in a wheelchair, y'all can't do nothing no way. Your band, you know, all of it's trash talking about the band and all of that stuff, too. I wish there was a way to just show band, like... My get rich idea that I know I could never do was to live stream HBCU band performances, but there's no way to get around the music copyrights of it, because every band plays every song on earth that you need millions of dollars to clear the performances for. I'm like, that's the simplest way to settle all of this beef, is to just do something like that.
Yeah, and then, I mean, while you cannot broadcast a band performance, you can broadcast a fight between the bands. That's always entertaining. How about we figure out a way to make that happen? Like something cultural I have talked about for a long time. I just don't fully understand it. And if anybody can explain it, I'd love to know, which is the personality differences between the black people who decide to join the band and the white people who decide to join the band. Now, first of all, if you are a black person at a white people's school and you decide to join the band, you will not be part of the band for one reason or another. Maybe because you don't feel like playing them wax songs, but largely because they might not feel like you playing them wax songs. But you don't see no whole lot of real integration in the marching band. So you get the white people marching band, which has the white people that you went to high school who were in the marching band, right? You know who they are. And white people, like the whole notion of the band nerd and everything else, this is a decidedly Caucasian concept, because there ain't no band nerd at the black school. That's not how it works. It's just a bunch of black people. Not necessarily anything the same about all of them, just a bunch of black people who play instruments, and a couple of them will f*** you up.
I will beat your ass.
Yeah.
And if you with me, you play the same instrument as me, you better know how to whoop ass. Because when we get out there, we might have to fight. Never forget Prairie View. Got to be ready.
Yes. And that band at PV got some people that's ready to fight you. Please believe that. Look, when Prairie View was not giving out athletic scholarships, they were giving stipends to the band. Just so you understand what in the world was going on and where they was coming from. Nah, man, the band always got some people. The one commonality between the black band and the white band, at least when you get to the college level, is in both of them, somebody playing drums sells weed. I don't know why, but it's always on the drum line.
Hilarious.
One of them sells weed.
That is such a true statement.
And one of them plays with sunglasses on.
Even the night games?
Even the night games.
I have a 90s question for you. I know you came up Houston and then spent some time up in North Carolina. North Carolina fashion has always struck me as this blend of East Coast and West Coast influence. You might see a bubble vest. Like, that's the Mason-Dixon line of bubble vests and Pelly Pill.
Yes. But
you might also still see cross colors or something that's a little more, you know, a little more wild. Mm. Did you ever wear Averex jackets?
I did not do that. The Averex jacket was cracking when I was in college. Like, the New Yorkers were real big into Averex jackets. And just generally speaking for me, outside of the Tims, once they decided they was doing it, it was just kind of like, I don't rock with y'all right now. But the Averex was big.
I don't know. Like, apparently they've come back around. Now, you want to talk about NFTs. Apparently they've come back around and being like some super popular, expensive fashion item now. And I went to grab one of them things, and that thing must have weighed about 58 pounds. And because you didn't wear them, so never mind. Because my question has always been, how do you function in something that heavy? How do you just do regular, like, that's why New York never smile, because they had 78 pounds worth of jacket weighing them down. Hell no, you can't run. You got to get in the shootout. You ain't going to get away.
Yo, you actually got me thinking here. If the Avirex is coming back around, is the NASCAR jackets coming back in these streets?
I hope so. I had one. Oh, I hope so. Bring them back. Bring them back. Bring back the Jeff Gordon, the old DuPont paint.
Yes.
The Rainbow Warrior jacket. There's not a lot of stuff from the 90s I would still wear. The stuff from the 90s I would still wear, they already sell. And that's pretty much just Air Max 95s.
Yes.
And every now and then, Nike catches me with a sneaker that I would rock. I was in a Goodwill a couple of months ago, and I saw a chalk line jacket. And I almost bought it just, it was a 49ers, but I was like, eh. But if they brought back chalk line, I think I would rock a chalk line jacket that's got the cool airbrush mural of the city and then like two prominent players from the team. It like, when you really look at a chalk line jacket now, it looked like the players died.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way they airbrush him on the back, it's like Jerry Rice in the clouds above San Francisco. He looked dead. I'm like, that's not. Put him down here with Joe Montana with the trees. Why you got Jerry Rice up here in the clouds looking like a dead man? But the problem is that I'm a Dolphins fan, and I don't know what two players they would put on the jacket. I guess Tua and Waddle.
Oh, damn, on that team. What about like Xavier Howard? He good?
He might be gone.
That's a good point.
He might bounce.
That's a good point.
So who do I commit to? That's why I always have a problem with jerseys, because I'm putting a man name on my back and then the man get traded. Bro, I bought a Jay Cutler jersey. Do you understand how stupid I look now?
And then.
Fair.
And then. Like Denver Jay Cutler or Bears Jay Cutler?
Whichever team he was with, I think he came from Bears to, he came Bears to Dolphins.
Oh, that's
Denver,
right.
He
that's
still
right.
had hope and potential.
That's right. I forgot.
He went to Chicago, so they believed in him.
Hold on. You bought a Jay Cutler jersey when he was playing for the Dolphins?
After he left the Bears.
I had forgotten completely that he played for the Dolphins. And so it never dawned on me that...
Don't be disrespectful.
Dude,
everyone remembers those 2 years.
Dog, he had retired and then came back. And I'm pretty damn sure it was 1 year, because y'all wouldn't have been... I mean, not even they would be dumb enough to bring Jay Cutler back for year two. Plus, he had to, you know... Jay Cutler finally started showing us his personality after he left the NFL. And I wish he hadn't.
Here's a funny story about that Jay Cutler jersey. I got an invite. The degrees of separation are irrelevant. I got an invite to the Dolphins facility while I was doing a show in South Florida. And as I've learned over a couple of trips to team facilities in my life, you kind of want to wear something that affiliate, you know, that endears you to the team. You know, even if you're not a fan of that team, wear something. At the time, the only decent Dolphins attire I had was the Jay Cutler jersey. And I did not know at the time that, and this is after Cutler's been traded. I don't know none of the drama with him and the team. All I know is that he played for us. He didn't do well. He left.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make sure I'm a good Dolphin fan when I show up to the Dolphin facility. So rather than just wear a neutral t-shirt, I put some on my Jay Cutler jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Wear my Jay Cutler jersey. I come in through the front door. You go through security. You get cleared by the security man. And the representative for the team comes out. And much to my surprise, they have made me a Roy Wood Jr. jersey as a gift. And she hands it to me. And then the security dude turns to me and goes, "Before you take another step, my advice to you, young blood, is to put that on and put that other jersey in a bag and leave it up here." I said, "What?" He called, like, when a black man call a young black man, when he call you young blood, he's trying to warn you.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to warn you about something. And the dude just said, "Take off the Jay Cutler jersey and put on your jersey and then go meet the Miami Dolphins. Trust me, young blood, this ain't what you want." And I don't know if they thought I was some sort of Jay Cutler spy coming in to talk, stab somebody. The North remembers. Yank. Like, nah, I was just showing love to the Dolphins, not Cutler.
Nah, yeah, but I mean, for me personally,
I get it.
Like it's the step of putting another white man's name on my back is just like I already got one. You know, like that one more white man's name on my back is just a little much. I can't, and that white man ain't gonna be no goddamn Jay Cutler.
Have we talked since I did Finding Your Roots?
Yes, we have. Did you show up at them people's houses?
No, so I'm thinking about it. I think February. I think that's the right time to go down there and do my recon.
Yeah, Roy found out he found you know, the name on his back, and now he wanted
to found the White Woods and the Descendants. I ain't finna go down there. I was talking about that on somebody else's show, and they were like, oh, you're just gonna show up to the house and make them feel guilty for what their relatives did? No. I just want to see how they're doing. I just want to make sure you're a little broke. I just want to make sure there's a little bit of a family curse or something.
Well, here's the thing. If there ain't no family curse, I understand the argument that you can't get reparations from the federal government, but I don't see why you can't get reparations from them. You part of the family. I feel like you are entitled to a cut.
Hey, listen, my great-great-great-granddaddy told me to swing by and get $100 from you right quick. Let me hold $100.
I built this right here. I built this.
I don't know. The county that they live in Georgia ain't that prosperous, so I don't know if I'm going to be walking into some wealth-type situation.
The county might not be prosperous, but that don't mean the white folks ain't.
I don't know, man. There's a feeling that if I go, I'm just going to see some person that just owns a coffee shop and it's just some regular-ass dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I got to figure that out, though. I still don't know what I'm going to do.
Hey, man, I wish you. I want to tell you, man, happy Thanksgiving, man. You know, it's been a crazy year, but it seemed like you done turned it into a good one.
Yeah, it's been all right, man. It's been all right. So, you know, Daily Show still cooking. They sending us out on craziness. I'll tell you the Idaho story next time.
Oh, yeah.
I had a lengthy conversation with a gentleman who bet me money that Kyle Rittenhouse was going to be found not guilty. Like we were covering a rally for a gubernatorial candidate, and it was people up there with free Kyle Rittenhouse. Like, remember when Boosie was in jail?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had them free Boosie t-shirts?
Mm-hmm.
It was like that. Same in terms of volume, like white person per capita wearing a free Kyle Rittenhouse shirt. And he tried to walk me through it, and I'd be damned if that dude wasn't right. But it was a very, very charged atmosphere.
Yeah, we'll talk about
it. We found the jokes.
Yeah, okay. Glad you did. We'll talk about more of that on another day. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing about three times a week. Gabe Bassane, Adi Kada, Dave Presley, Hannah Things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.